Previously on the Jay and Dan podcast.
Mm-hmm. That should be Skype slogan. Skype. Hey, we're still here.
Mm-hmm. Your Skype ID still doesn't make sense, but we'll make sure you get those cannonballs on camera.
Mm-hmm. So I'm in Peterborough. Go get gas. Mm-hmm. There's a voicemail saying the driver of, and they described the vehicle with a license plate, a 50-something man wearing a mask filled up the vehicle and then left without paying. Mm-hmm. So I was very offended. I'm 44. I was described as a 50-something man in a mask.
50, not just 50. 50-something.
Mm-hmm. Me and my boys, I became their dad.
Mm-hmm. My kitchen is hot as hell, and Ron is just being a jerk. He's just like, stop.
Meow.
Mm-hmm. Ron is going to be a big part of me and my boys.
I'm okay with that. Can Ron talk? Can Ron talk? But he only talks to me. Like
yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to. God damn it, Ron. Get off the camera.
Yeah, Ron, stop.
Mm-hmm. Hey, put me down, man. Motherfucker always picking me up.
You're listening to the Jay and Dan podcast. Brought to you by our friends at McDonald's.
Oh, hi. I thought you had more. I didn't know. I was
that
getting into the beat.
That seemed to end abruptly. That seemed to end very abruptly.
Right down to business.
Hey, it's June 9th. It's June 9th, 2020.
You know what that means, Dan? Winter is over.
Hottest day of the year in our area.
That was absolutely awesome outside. Unless you didn't have air conditioning inside, like producer Tim and yourself just a couple of weeks ago. But thankfully, you got both of those problems solved.
Yeah, AC's back on. It's like a meat locker in here. Hey, this I added on Twitter here. So these videos, I don't know if you've seen them, where the people, they'll hit a ball into the air, they'll run through their house and get it on the other side.
Right.
This person took eight minutes to run through the house and it came out the other side. I'm like, okay, come on. He put the ball into orbit?
Man, you have a lot of time on your hands, Toolsy. For a guy with a newborn baby.
Hey, I've got to tell you this, though. When you've got two kids, both in close to double digits, and you have a newborn, you got built-in babysitters. It's like, hey, should have thought of this before.
How would you have thought of it before?
I know. That was. I was hoping you'd pick up on that.
I think you should have kids every 10 years, approx. Until you are 80. So you have another one right away, and then you have two more when you're 55, and then two more when you're 65. And I actually really like this idea, the idea of Dan, every 10. It'll be a new show on Crave TV, every 10 with you, and every time, different woman, every 10 years, different babies.
If I get paid for it, sure, why not? More the merrier. At this point, we're going to be stuck in our homes for the next 2 years, so might as well create babies.
Yeah, I guess you might as well create babies. No, but it seems like everything's opening up now, Dan. Everybody's getting out and everybody's doing things, and stores are opening and restaurants are opening. And yeah, we're back, baby.
Yeah, but did you see Vegas?
The virus is over.
Yeah. The Canada-U.S. border is going to be closed for the next year. And when will we ever be able to go to New Zealand? That's one of my dream trips. There's no COVID there. They got rid of it. No one's ever going to be allowed back there.
Prime Minister, I don't know her name, the lady. She, very young. She seems to have captured the hearts of the Kiwis because she just smashed COVID into bits down there.
So,
and we have friends we could stay with in New Zealand. We've our buddies from Sky Sports New Zealand that we hung out with in Sochi at the Olympics. All those cats, they would gladly take us in.
Remember when Scotty, one of those guys, came to LA? when we were there. I think he wanted to stay on one of our couches, didn't he? But none of us offered that up.
Yeah, so this is, I don't know if we've discussed this, but, and I would love to hear from Australian and New Zealand natives about this. I feel like what happened was at the end of the Sochi experience, the Sky Sports New Zealand crew was staying with us. They were so nice. And Scotty, who's like a rugby commentator and well-known sports guy down there, I think, you know, one of us just said, you know, he said, oh, I'd love to come to LA. And we're like, hey, let us know. You know, we got lots of people, you know, there's a million of us. There's going to be somewhere for you to stay. And literally like 2 months later, he showed up and I don't think he contacted anybody. Like, I think he just thought, okay, I'll just get there and like, there'll be a million rooms for me. And I remember we went out with him one night to a bar and he was just like, afterward, he's like, yeah, can you drive me to my hotel? And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, man. Like, hope this hasn't been a really expensive trip for you since you didn't have anywhere to stay but this hotel I'm taking you to. Yeah, it's just different. I think the Aussies and Kiwis, they're happy to stay on couches, and sometimes the North Americans are just not ready to offer them up.
The last time I let a buddy stay on a couch, I was working in Vancouver, late 90s. And after a week of it, my girlfriend at the time said, when's he leaving? Is there a time limit on this? And I finally had to say,
you were living with a woman and you said that your buddy could stay with you on your couch? Like, you didn't think that was going to be a problem?
No, it was like 20-something. I was like 21, 22. I'm like, hey, all right, this is going to be great. Because none of my friends had ever been in Vancouver. So if they came there, they'd come visit. We had a good time. So you'd have like a 1-2 day visit with most people and then they move on. This guy though, after 1 week, I said, okay, how do you say that to a buddy? You got to get out.
Yeah. But did you talk to your then girlfriend? And I assume you had children with that girlfriend.
No.
Did you talk to her? Did you talk to her about this guy coming to stay or did he just show up like Scotty did?
Oh, no, I said, yeah, my buddy's coming. He's going to sleep on the couch. And she's like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. And then he overstayed his welcome.
Right. And now he and that ex-girlfriend are now a couple.
Now she actually lives in London. I saw her at the London Olympics when we were there. She married a Russian okay. financier.
Okay, she definitely upgraded is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Man, what a life we lead. Well, Dan, I just saw something. Speaking of Twitter, a friend of mine just sent me something. He said that it seems that all the hipsters of Toronto who went to Trinity Bellwoods Park that day, and that was a big deal, and they all showed up at once, and they weren't social distancing. Everyone was upset. Turns out there has not been a significant increase in COVID because of that park incident. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, hey, hipsters, get out there and f*** each other.
Well, the hipsters, the vape fumes. Are the hipsters vape? I don't think they vape, do they?
I feel like vaping isn't cool. Like, it's not a cool thing to do. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a, maybe it's from a health perspective, it's better than smoking, I guess. I don't know, but maybe it isn't better. But I don't see a lot of hipsters. And as you know, Dan, I live in like a hipster central down here. I don't see a lot of them with the jewel or the big giant vape that looks like it's like a piece of audio equipment or something.
No, it looks like a part of a car.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like a giant spark plug or something like that. It's I don't see any hipsters vaping. You know what I do see them doing? Smoking.
Oh, smoking's back?
I feel like smoking's never, well, I just feel like it's, some people are just going to like doing it. Anyway, I was never that guy. Man, I know you weren't. I don't think Stoff was, but producer Tim was and is.
Hey, going for a dart.
Yeah, first time, I don't know if I've told the story. First time I had a dart, I snuck it out of my brother's pack that he hid in his jacket or something on the farm. Hopped on the four-wheeler, went out to the middle of the field, lit that baby up, and then proceeded to puke for about an hour after.
Nice dart, Bob.
The thing with the cigarette smoke, it just, It's so sharp. It hits your lungs.
Yes.
Like,
and then it's like, and then if you aren't a smoker, you start sweating. You're like, am I going to die?
Yeah. My first experience with cigarette smoke, believe it or not, was a cigarette and marijuana joint rolled together. Like, I had a friend who was a smoker, right? And she liked to roll marijuana and tobacco together into joints because for some reason she thought, I don't know why she did that.
They always said, this is smoother this way. No, it's not.
Right. And then she didn't tell me she was doing that. So then I take, you know, a hit and I'm like, what the hell is this? What is stabbing me in the heart right now? What is that smoke stabbing me right in the heart? I was not a fan, and I remain not a fan of smoking. However, I love the idea of you, me, and Stoff. When we all turn 50, we all just take up smoking. We just take it up. We just start doing it, and then we not only take it up, we become 3-pack-a-day dart hackers. Like, we crush it. Crush it. From 50 to 80.
My brother Vince, who is on this podcast, he's been on it before, as he always says, he's a smoker. He said, yeah, it takes years off your life, but all the bad years. I'm like, he might have a point.
He might have a point. He might have a point. I mean, it's a stress reliever for a lot of people. I know it is a stress reliever for producer Tim. Can you imagine Tim, as stressed out as he is, Tim plus no darts? That's a Tim I don't want to see.
Have you ever met a smoker that's not a talker? Because when you're a smoker, you're always having conversations with other smokers.
And, yeah, you're not. And that is be an introvert.
That's exactly why I didn't take up smoking. I'm like, I don't want those conversations.
You don't want to talk to those people standing outside in the freezing cold in January outside of a restaurant or something like that.
Yeah.
Someone trying to bum your cigs. Right? You don't want that. Matthew Dumba, how are you, my friend?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We don't have great introductions on this podcast. We just sort of see you pop up and we start talking to you. Where are you at right now?
I'm back in Calgary right now. Where are you guys at?
We're in Toronto while Dan's just outside of Toronto. We're in the greater Toronto area, I guess you could say.
I'm in a little town called Orno, and on our Welcome to Orno sign is Stanley Cup champion Brian Bickle's name.
Bix. That's a player, though. On those cup runs?
Yeah, that's right. That is a place. So are you at your place in Calgary, Matthew? Is that where you spend your off season?
Yeah. Back at the crib. I just had to come back here, get out of when this was all going down with the pandemic. Just kind of talk about closing the border. So I was just trying to get back here as fast as possible. So I wasn't stuck in the States.
And are you training currently with anyone in Calgary? Any other players?
One of my buddies I grew up with, Dylan Hetherington. He plays for Texas Stars. He's captain of Texas Stars, and he's up and down with Dallas.
So have you been in touch with teammates, and are they sticking to their workout routines, or are we going to see like circa 1980 NHL where it takes like 2 weeks before guys are like, oh yeah, I'm kind of back in shape again?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a good, the guys are working out to keep their sanity, I think. But I don't know. We'll see if there's any good videos coming out of that first couple weeks of training camp.
Speaking of training, remember Matthew, like back in the day, like, even when Nikolai Habibulin played and he would like go and hack a dart in between the first and second period. Is anybody in the NHL still smoking? We were just discussing the fact that we're going to take up smoking later in life because we never did it. We're going to try it later. Anybody still crushing darts in the NHL?
To be honest, I haven't heard of anyone still doing hacking darts between them. But I do. It is kind of, it's frequently talked about in my friend group, just being in Calgary, because I heard back in the day Mika used to do it.
Yes, he did.
That's everyone's favorite goaltender around here. And even the fact that he was smoking darts in between periods, or maybe smoking darts in between periods, is just
a trick. They call that the Guy Lafleur smoking darts between periods, right? Because Lafleur did that. And I don't know, Matthew, if you've ever seen the video of Al Iafredi. He's about to do a post-game interview, and he's hacking on a dart, and he's like, how much do I have? And they're like, 30 seconds. He's like, takes one more haul and just flicks it off camera.
I don't know. You hear stories about in some of the rinks that back in the day, like, guys had specific rooms built for them or areas that they would go to, whether it's like the showers or they were like sneaking off away from the locker room. But no, the game's changed a lot since then.
Okay, so we've got the smoking. What is the strangest current thing that you've seen a player do? Like, we've seen Ovi drink a Coca-Cola on the bench. I see that. You need sugar in your system. What's the strangest thing you've seen a teammate or an opponent do where you're like, what the hell's that guy doing?
The Coke on the bench, I've actually seen that's actually a normal thing. But people put it in the Gatorade bottle, sometimes hide it a little, you know?
Well, Colby Armstrong, Matthew, said about that, it wasn't just the sugar, but that, you know, guys, if they're nervous, sometimes like a Coke, you know, will sort of settle their stomachs down a little bit. That was his theory about it.
I'll be honest, in between the second and third, I treat myself to a Coke.
Nice. And then
sometimes I'll be like battling in the first, like thinking about the Coke. Like, hey, let's get there. Third period's your period, buddy. Just wait till you get this pull in you.
What about Pedialyte? Are guys crushing Pedialyte still?
You're seeing that on the plane. Like, they're dishing out Pedialytes maybe on back to back. I'm not really a big fan of the Pedialyte, but I've seen a couple Pedialyte tonics on the plane.
Yes.
So, we kind of have to get serious with you because you are part of a big, big announcement this week, Matthew. You are on the executive committee of the Hockey Diversity Alliance that has just been formed. Akeem Aliyu and Evander Kane are the co-chairs, and then you're part of the executive committee with Wayne Simmonds, Chris Stewart, Joel Ward, who recently retired, among others. First of all, how did this all come about exactly? And was it Akeem and was it Evander that sort of spearheaded it?
It was. It came about probably, we've been talking since November. And then it just happened to be this seven guys who kind of stuck together. We've all either played together or, you know, are acquainted through each other in some way or another. So it's cool having a group that everyone's friends with. And we've just been talking constantly for the last week and a bit, or 2 weeks, every day or every other day for, you know, hours at a time. So we've done our due diligence, and announcing it yesterday was kind of the first big step.
Now, are you going to be a sounding board for players right now? How's this going to work? Because we've seen stories coming out of the GTHL in Toronto, what it was like for some players playing in that system being black. And you saw Akeem's story. Are you guys going to help these people tell these stories? Are you going to be there for you guys to listen to them? What's your guys' goal?
I think, yeah, we've talked about that in a number of different ways, and kind of a mentorship program has been kind of floating around there. But really, it is attacking those minor league, not even minor league, it's the
minor hockey,
yeah, minor hockey, starting right from the start, because I think that's where we all first, you know, dealt with racism. And that's so sad. Even just hearing guys' stories or hearing kids' stories about it still happening today, just, you know, it pulls out my heart, and it just, you know, it brings up all those feelings that I had when I was little, when I was going through that stuff with my family. And, you know, it's not right. So I think that's one of the biggest stands our group is going to take. And I think we're going to do some awesome stuff. And I'm really excited to share this with the world.
Or did you yourself, Matthew, experience a lot of racism growing up playing minor hockey?
Yeah, on a number of different occasions. It affected my family to the point where, you're leaving rinks and, mom would be in tears or she'd just be irate. Just yelling on the way out of the rink and, having dad always could try to just kind of get us into the car and having those deep family talks later on in the night. But, going through all of that and then also, not wanting my mom to feel like that way or my little brother see that, I'd taken on a lot of that stuff and bottled it up over the years. So when I got on with this group and started hearing guys' stories, it just made me think like this shouldn't be a conversation that parents have to have with their kids. You shouldn't have to sit down with your child and tell them, hey, like, you got to take the high road and you got to have tough skin and work through this. They're only doing that because that's the only thing they have on you. That conversation doesn't really happen with white parents. And it shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be in our game at all.
So you mentioned the talks you had to have with your parents, but there must have been a part of you. If I had experienced that, I'd just say, F them. Why do I want to put myself through this? I'm never going back to that rink.
And that's the part. Like, I've seen since my time in Minnesota, I've had a bunch of different kids come to the locker room after a game that have faced that. And that's the worst part about it. Some of those kids are pushed to that point where they don't want to go back. And fortunate for me, I had that strong love for the game. And kind of just pushed through it. But can you imagine a generation of kids who didn't have to deal with that and could just love the game at its purest? And what could be? If you can tap into this generation of kids that doesn't have to go through those things, you could just grow the game so much more and just make this something really special that we all love the game of hockey, and just to spread this would be awesome.
I wonder, Matthew, your thoughts and your feelings over the past couple of weeks since George Floyd was killed, because of course you play in Minnesota and you're living in that town, and that town is kind of a part of you right now. Just wondering what your thoughts and emotions were, not just about the horrific video itself, but just the city itself, and how they've reacted to what happened.
Yeah, to be honest, I could see, if I was standing in my apartment, I could see that whole community from my apartment. It's only a mile and a half away, and I do work pretty closely with that community. There's a group, a nonprofit I work with called ACES, Athletes Committed to Educating Students, and we look to bridge the gap of the education system in Minnesota, in the parts of the city that are less fortunate. And a lot of those kids are in that community. So on Lake Street specifically, where the riots and the protesting was going down, that was kind of my first reaction, is I'm scared for those kids, and those kids that may not have somewhere else to go right now and are scared to leave their homes, but really everything around them is on fire. And it's just like anarchy through that. And a lot of the people coming into the neighborhood weren't even from there, or they're from all over the U.S. And not a lot of them protesting, protesting or grieving through the George Floyd death. People just there to loot and start fires and kind of break down the community. Whereas the people in Minnesota and people part of that community you saw in the days after were cleaning up and handing out groceries. So I was really proud of seeing Minnesota come together the way they have, and I think it's terrible, terrible tragedy, and no one should have had to gone through any of this. But the fact of the matter is that it's happening now, and seeing how people are coming together and these talks that everyone's having, getting it out there, I think is what we really need to promote this change and make a change in our society that will last.
Yeah, and George Floyd, as they keep saying, his daughter said it, I believe one of his siblings said it at his memorial service today, he's going to change the world. That that mural of him in Minnesota is already iconic.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, he is going to change the world. Rest in power. I like when I've seen people saying that. It is powerful. Just crazy the effect that he's had on this community and the change and difference he's going to make in a lot of people's lives. Special.
Or other, there's the seven of you who started the alliance, who started the committee. Are other Black NHLers, both past and present, Matthew, have you contacted them, reached out to them, or have they reached out to you?
Yeah, a lot of guys have been reaching out. We're looking to expand as a group and have people come on as ambassadors from all races. I don't think it's we're starting with Black people and promoting Black Lives Matter, but at the end of the day, we're gonna have a bunch of different guys on this board, women. It's gonna be something special that everyone can grow through, and everyone can help be a part of this movement.
Do you think, I'm not gonna categorize Evander Kane as like a stubborn guy or a cocky guy, but do you think maybe he has that attitude because of the shit that he's had to deal with while playing hockey, and people misunderstand him? That's just, he's grown a thick skin. He's like, this is the way I have to carry myself, and everyone else can F off.
Yeah, to be honest, playing against Evander, it's not very fun. I didn't really like the guy much before I got to know him. But just his views on all of this and how he's been working tirelessly. This guy's been on the phone and just making a difference, like, yeah, every day, every second. Hard to tie him down for a moment just to have a conversation, because he's got a lot of things on the go right now, him and Akeem. But yeah, he's always had to play with that chip on his shoulder, and you see that in his game. You see that in a lot of our games. So it could have been a reason why he got to where he was and why he is a little misunderstood, but I think once you get to know him and what his heart is about, you'll be able to understand more and like him a lot more.
All right, let's lighten things up. Favorite thing about playing for Red Deer and Junior?
Ooh, favorite thing playing in Red Deer? Hitting Denny's on a Sunday with. And just putting in an order. just saddle up there with my $10 bill and just go nuts. With eight of the boys.
This one's going to be tough. You won a gold for Canada in Russia in 2016. What's your favorite part about Russia?
Oh, Mother Russia. Ilya Briskalov.
Yes, good answer.
But I got to play with him for a couple months or whatever. But the Grizzly Bear, man.
What was that like? Give us was he in fine form at all times, or was the mood up and down?
He was hilarious, man. There's one time we're in We're in the locker room after a preseason game. And I was like, Riz, how was that? And he goes, like a tail of dog. I'm like, what? He's like, all you young kids come in here, play a game, and it's just tail of dog. You don't know what you're doing. You're so excited, like hit puck everywhere. Guys not where they're supposed to be. Like Aaron's so excited, like puppy jumping up and down.
Like, oh my God, I wish I had this on video, man. Like,
there's thousands of stories like that.
What a guy. And I have Dubnik, who's like, maybe he's the opposite, like he's almost like a cerebral type. Or am I wrong? Or is he shown? Is there a side of him that we don't get to see all the time?
I don't know. No, there's a bit of a side that you don't get to see. Dubby likes to talk and get in the mix. So you just push him into it a little more next time.
How about Mikko Koivu? Is he a robot? No, it's just like he's a guy that he just continues on. They put, like, you hit the start button, he just continues on. You're like, that guy is still playing.
He's still playing. Yeah, he's been awesome to me and my family. Just a great leader and someone who, you know, once you get close to him, once you get a couple of the screws loose and get into the interior of the robot. he's awesome, dude, and he really showed me what it takes to be a professional in the league, because this guy comes to work every day and just ready to work and get better. That's just testament to his longevity in the league, right?
So for you, Matthew, if we think the training camps might get going mid-July, hopefully, I mean, optimistically, when do you see yourself heading back to the Twin Cities?
I'm not even too sure. I guess it'll depend on if they have a definitive date on when phase three will start. Looking like end of July or start of August. So maybe within the next month and a half. So still got some time, but that's gonna be crazy just jumping back into the mix like that.
Your take on whoever wins the cup, is there an asterisk, or you just like, yeah, they won it, no problem?
If Wild wins the cup, there's no asterisk. There's no asterisk. I'm a champ. You guys are not taking that away from me. No one. Anyone else wins, yeah, there's an asterisk.
Good answer, yeah.
But are you, you could end up, you know, living in a hotel for 3 months. You know, like, do you stop and think about that? I mean, I guess you're kind of living in hotels anyway on the road, but it's like one hotel. I mean, it's kind of a weird situation to think about.
That could honestly be a reason why you take away the asterisk, because you're going to have to battle through this if you go deep into the playoffs, and just being away from your families and friends, that could definitely wear on guys. And I know that's kind of some of the guys' concern too, is, you know, you're in the middle of summer, and, you know, a lot of the guys got the kids at home right now, and
yeah,
Havoc, you got them cooped up from the pandemic, and now dad's gone for a couple of months. So,
but come on, I admit though,
not sure.
A lot of guys are like, get me the hell out of here. I can't wait for this to happen.
Yeah, that's probably true too.
Yes, 100%.
You can argue there's 100 different ways.
Yeah.
Listen, Matthew, this was awesome just to get to talk to you a little bit, and congratulations again on the Alliance formation. I think that's just such an amazing thing you guys are doing. And continued success in Minnesota and all that, and I hope you're staying safe in Calgary.
Yeah, thanks guys. Thanks for having me. This is really dream come true being on with you guys. I know I'm speaking for my whole friend here in Calgary. used to watch y'all every day before school, and we're pretty pumped that I was coming on here today.
And who? Hey, wait, we have a segment called Scrum Lurkers. Who is that behind you there?
Someone's lurking behind you.
We're all
no,
back.
Blakey. No, come on, say hi.
We're all back here.
it's the crew.
Hello.
Gabby Jackal, come say hi.
Whoa, they're coming out everywhere.
There they are. We're all behind the wall there.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, guys. Enjoy your Tuesday night.
Yeah, take care. See you later.
See you guys.
Oh, they're going to rip it up tonight.
Cool. Good to see him. Good dude.
I got fruit flies flying around. I got no fruit out.
That's a problem for you.
I think they can come from the drain. So maybe I need to run more water. They can.
Other things can come from the drain too. You know my rock wall here? My wall, maybe you've seen it on TV.
Yep.
Yesterday I saw like a centipede come out of this wall, a gigantic centipede. I'm covering this wall up. Lester McLean is joining us now. Lester,
hey guys.
I'm covering this wall up. This wall is going to be, just enjoy it while you can, because it's gone. I can't have centipedes.
Okay, you can't do it.
Hey, Lester. Do you notice something behind Stoff?
Yeah, that's my background. Oh, my God. Hilarious.
Yes.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
Guys, good to see you. Jay,
good
you took
to
the
see
beard
you.
Off, eh?
I never had a beard in this whole coronavirus pandemic.
You didn't?
Situation.
I'm sorry.
No, because I just I thought I'd go the other way. Because you have a great beard. Dan has a great beard.
Yeah,
Stoff has a great beard.
Yeah.
Lester, I'm finding you're probably finding the same stuff for you as well. When you wear a mask with a beard, it is extremely uncomfortable.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Terrible.
So, Lester, we should probably, to those who don't know you, you've been working behind the scenes at TSN for pretty much as long as I've ever been at TSN. I remember you being. When did you come to the network?
I started on September 25th, 1995, sir. So
okay,
I'm 24
so
years
before
in.
Before me.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. And what is your current role at the network?
My official role is program manager TSN and ESPN Classic.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, in the last couple of months, it's meant that I've been front and center because obviously my specific role is non-live programming and barter deals and captioning and stuff like that. So that's all we've been doing, really. I mean, we've got some live stuff, and obviously you guys came back and everything, but we got NASCAR, we got UFC and other properties coming back, but a lot of it's still a lot of our archives. So that means going back into archives, going back to 2009 and 2008 and 2005 to grab stuff. So it's been busy, but it's been really good. It's been nice to sort of see what we've done and go back to play at the times like 2005 when it was like, oh, this broadcast is available in TSN HD. You know, of course, you know what I mean? It's been very cool. It's been a lot of fun. So
Lester, are you in on when people are pitching documentaries, and have you seen some like wild pitches where you're like, that's never going to be seen by another human? You must have some wild things that you've seen.
I've seen some things. Yes. I've seen some things that have been crazy, and it's like, there's no way this is going to happen. And then we've also massaged other things that we've tried to make happen. So it's that type of vibe, you know?
And then your other, you lead like a dual life because
I do.
I think your true passion is music, and you're an incredible musician. You
Thank
performed
you.
At my wedding. You were
yes,
incredible.
I did. Thank you.
And you perform live all the time, different bands, lots of different things that mm-hmm. you do. You put out an amazing. I thought you put out an amazing Instagram video. You got to go check it out. On Instagram, and you talked about how the George Floyd death and the subsequent protests have affected you. You said you're not really comfortable talking about it.
Not at all.
Per se, but you would never have known it because you spoke so beautifully and so eloquently about it.
Thank
I personally
appreciate
thought.
That.
I really enjoyed it. And you you told the kiss story. I thought it was somewhat appropriate that that a story about a band would be the thing that sort of affected you at a young age about race first, or at least the thing you remember the most.
Well, it's definitely, listen, it's 100% true. It's definitely the very first moment in my life where I went, oh, I see. But I assume you want me to tell the story. So
yeah, maybe.
Yes, please. For your listeners.
So in any case, this was back in primary school, maybe 7 or 8 years old, grade one, grade two. And a bunch of boys and myself were sitting around a table talking about Halloween and what we're going to do for Halloween. And somebody threw out the idea, hey, let's dress up as Kiss. And I was like, that's a great idea. So, you know, one guy says, I'll go as Paul Stanley. And somebody said, Peter Criss. And somebody said, Ace Frehley. And I thought, okay, well, that's great. I'll be Gene Simmons. And then one guy goes, well, hold on a second. You can't be Gene Simmons. And I was like, why can't I be Gene Simmons? And he said, because you're black. Gene Simmons is white. And I was like, well, no, hold on. I could be Gene Simmons. I put the white face makeup on and you know, I do the thing. I mean, that was the thing about that band. They had, I mean, yes, they were obviously Caucasian, but at the end of the day, you could put that makeup on. So it was a real a moment for me where, I mean, listen, I want to emphasize two things. And I don't think I've said this before. Number one, I don't believe like the kid was trying to be mean. That's just kids, right? I mean, kids are the way they are at that age. But I think the second thing is I didn't come away from that situation or that incident being crushed. In fact, it was the opposite for me. It was actually probably the last time that anybody was going to tell me I wasn't going to do something because of the color of my skin again. And that really sort of stuck with me. That's kind of the fire in my belly that was lit in my belly at the time as I sit here with my dreadlocks and my beard. But
so... Okay, so Lester, then I love, you know, I just loved your message. I just thought it was really poignant. And you talked about people who had reached out to you, specifically white friends who had reached out to you. I feel like that's something that, you know, I myself have tried to do with black friends, and it's sort of like an awkward thing. I don't know, you know, you're feeling like, you feel like you're feeling something for your friend. You want to let them know you're thinking about them. And I thought you just said it so eloquently, you know, that you appreciated what was being said. And yeah, well, it's kind of a tough thing.
It is a tough thing. And, you know, and since I've posted this, like, I got to tell you, I'm overwhelmed by the response to that video. I mean, a lot of people have posted it and asked me to share it. And I think that's fantastic. And again, I appreciate you guys having me on to talk about this, because as uncomfortable as I am, it's important. But I had two specific conversations that I want to bring up. One was yesterday, a friend of mine that I'd known since high school, she called me up. We were in band class together, in band camp. And wow. But she phoned me up and she said, you know, she saw my video. She was very moved and touched and everything. And she pointed out to me that there was an incident. Her father, unfortunately, her father had some racist qualities. And she said that she was mortified when I started talking about the story, because she thought she was going to mention this one incident. And I guess what happened is I was at her house and we were hanging out, and her father, I don't remember what the comment was. He had said something very inappropriate concerning black people and whatnot. And she just told me that over the years with him, she had so many frustrating arguments with him about it. And the thing about it with him, as she says, is that he was a great guy and I felt very welcome in the house. I always did. Never had a problem at that household. But she told me that, you know, Pakistani neighbor that they had, always got along with them, no problems. They were buddies. They had drinks, whatever. And, you know, but yet there's somehow there was this bias when it came to watching the news and he would make certain comments and whatnot. So she said to me that she wanted to tell me that, you know, again, she felt very bad about that. She wanted to tell me that she stood up against racism with her dad, which is very difficult. And listen, I mentioned in the video, you're going to have to confront family members. You're going to have to confront people that are colleagues. You're going to have to come from people maybe to play on your hockey team and say, this is enough, right? But this is the types of things she was doing back then. So it's very good. And consequently, she has a daughter now. And the daughter is very, very tall and very open in all ways. And that's really good, you know, because they talked about it. So it's important.
Sherry Ford, I don't know if you guys saw our colleague. Yes. She put out an outstanding article, and it's like, And I tweeted her. I'm like, so many people have to come to grips with about the family member where it's not just like, oh, that's just how he is. I remember leaving my grandmother's apartment. We'd go visit at her apartment in Peterborough and didn't have a racist bone in her body. She probably never saw a black face in her life. And there's the type of nuts that are called N-word toes at the time. Okay. So that's what the nut was called. And she would say that. As soon as we left, my dad would get us in the elevator. He's like, that word your grandma said about those nuts, never say that word.
Yes.
So that was the only time we ever heard it growing up. But nowadays, like, people might think to their grandparent, my grandfather always referred to someone this way or someone.
Mm-hmm.
Now's the time to say, hey, no, confront them. It's just like it's gone on too long and it's not, oh, that's just the way they are anymore. That's just not tolerated.
Well, exactly. And again, you know, and I think, again, listen, against the backdrop of this pandemic, fortunately, there's nothing else except to have these conversations, you know? I mean, obviously, for us in the sports business, we'd like to have some sports, please. But, but while we don't, you know, I mean, and I said it too in my video, I don't want to go back to a post-pandemic world where we have these issues and things haven't changed. I want us all to make a concerted effort to move forward. And I think it's possible. I talked to a friend of mine in Atlanta, Georgia, the other day. She lived in Brooklyn, New York, all of her life. And she moved down to Atlanta 3 years ago. And it's a different world down there. And she said, for the first time in her life, she feels like this is different. This is something different that's happening now. And that's mm-hmm. really important for a woman from Brooklyn. I'll quote one more story. I just actually, before you guys called me, I had a conversation with a friend of mine, Greek heritage. We've gotten along for years and years, played music together. And he said that he's really, you know, not because he feels like he did anything wrong, but in fact, he's really sort of stepped back and had a look at his life and how he's conducted himself. And he's wondering if he should have done more, if he should have said more at various times in his life. And I think, again, I mean, that's great. And I don't want him to feel any guilt about it, because I think that's an important part of this too. Don't feel guilty. Let's just have these conversations. Let's open it up and say, listen, guys, have a meaningful conversation about this. And look, if we do that, I think we'll be really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's start now. You know, everyone's looking back so much, right? No, but you know what I mean, Lester? Everyone's like, man, what I did this, I did that. And it's like, all right, let's do it, man. Let's start right now.
Yeah.
And let's make an honest change right now and push it forward. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That to me is the most important thing. Yeah, you said it best. You don't want to go back to the way it was before the pandemic. I couldn't agree more. Lester, we also wanted to talk to you about the fact that you are a regular on the Rubber Boots podcast.
Yes, indeed.
Our friend Christoph.
Yes,
and
the award-winning producer, by the way. That guy. I'm gonna big you up, brother. You're outstanding, man. What you do week in and week out for us and for this podcast is amazing. So, yeah, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, 100%. Staff is the best.
I'm not sure what award I actually did win, but I'll put it right on the mantle.
The Screenies will have
the Screenies. Oh my God.
Sorry, my daughters were FaceTiming there. I'll call them right back.
Okay.
You can talk to him now if you want. We can have a conversation.
No.
Bring him in with us. But Lester, what we really wanted to talk to you about was the now infamous trip to the Turks and Caicos.
Yeah.
To the resort that James seems to not only know the manager, but possibly have a stake in financially at this point. And the fact that the entire Rubber Boots crew went down to the Turks and Caicos for this trip. First of all, just would love to get your take on what happened. And when he told you were going on the trip, did you actually believe him?
Oh, listen, I will not, look, you have to understand, Mr. Duthie and I, Jimmy, as we call him, we go back a long way. We've been working together since 2002, doing a lot of different things musically for TSN, and obviously we have Puck Over Glass and Don't Take My Goal Away and now this podcast. So I'm not gonna say anything bad about that guy. But he, when he started talking about the trip, I was like, okay, this is probably going to happen. True to his word, we were all down there. He came and picked me up himself at the airport. left-hand drive car, and that was a fantastic 5 days. I'm sure you guys listen to the podcast, so you know all about the Weimar Resort and the Villa, and it was an outstanding place. I have to say that is easily the best resort I've ever stayed at in my life. For sure.
So Duffy is definitely part owner of that resort. did he also get each of you to bring a suitcase to the airport to him there and not look inside it?
Nothing like that. Nothing like that.
Yeah, sure.
No, not at all. I did stop at the free shop, though.
Oh, okay. Champagne.
Yeah.
All right. That's fair. And
yeah.
For you, Lester, having to see, man, I just like think of Duffy's body and Stoff's body. you have to see so much of it. I mean, have you recovered?
I've recovered just fine. You know, I'll tell you, it's funny because just before we took that trip, I had a bunch of touring that I did. So I was on the road. So by the time I got down there, I was pretty tired. And of course, you know, we'd all said on the podcast that you know, going into it, that we were going to work out and everything, and we were going to be, you know, New Jack Turks. Yeah,
there was a lot of different New Jack attempts at fitness that all sort of did not work.
But by the time I got down there, I felt pretty fat. It didn't help that we were crushing beers at the fire and you know, we're eating burgers and it was a good time. And I'll say this to you all, I'll say this to you, Jay and Dan, if you ever get the chance to go, do not hesitate. It's awesome.
Okay, when we're allowed to travel again, why don't we do a dual podcast?
Yeah!
Wow!
Crossover episode.
Yes.
You just blew my mind, Dan. You just blew my mind, Daniel, too. That's a great idea.
But for us to get the full feel of it, it needs to be 2 weeks there.
Listen, you know what? I was there for 1 day less than everybody because, as I said, I had a tour, so I had an event that I had to do before I went down there, so I felt a little robbed that I didn't get that extra day, but 5 days down there was just glorious. And I don't know if you've seen pictures, but we had the villa, and you walk out onto the deck, and then you walk down, and there's water. Oh, beautiful, man, beautiful.
I would love
to go back. Yes, it was good.
I'd love to go down there, and I'd love to bunk with Stock. Just one double bed, just a double bed. And just me and Stuff.
I think, you know, listen, I think there were some spooning opportunities that I missed out on, which I'm disappointed about. But, you know.
It was a sought after item.
All right, buddy. We're going to let you go. You're an amazing human being.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
Lester, you're very talented, and it's a pleasure knowing you and, more importantly, working with you.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. God bless you all, and stay safe, okay?
See ya, bud.
Okay, cheers,
see you, buddy.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Yeah, I've seen Lester perform at 2 weddings, and I've also been to see him at least once when he was, like, playing a bar by me. So I've seen him 3 times live, and I have so much respect for people that are just good at music. Like, well, any song, you're like, is this the original version? But it can't be. He's playing it.
Multi-instrumentalist, plays in like a Elton John cover band called Elton Ron, which is hilarious, and they do tons and tons of gigs all over the continent and in Europe and stuff. He played kind of at our wedding when we were eating and all that, and people afterward was just like, who is that guy? And we're like, yeah, we work with him, he's amazing. Yeah. Programming ESPN Classic as we speak.
All right, we're out of time. This, again, most people can't see the video. We put Ron to sleep.
Ron really loves the spotlight.
Yeah.
The cat's been put to bed, as they say in the biz.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, it's been fun. Enjoy the pandemic. It's not going to be over for for another couple years.
Third hole.
Listening to the Jay and Dan podcast, brought to you by our friends at McDonald's. James Duffy presents the Rubber Boots Podcast.
So we're sitting down at our table. The waiter comes up and he's like profusely sweating. And this is like 100% his first line to us. He goes, "Hello. I am not well. I'm very ill."
You ate there?
I came down with it yesterday. I've just not been good. Not good at all.
Get it at tsn.ca and anywhere you get your podcasts.